Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and I just want to thank you for joining the Dr. Drew podcast and supporting the Corolla Pirate Ship here at the Corolla Network. And please, just a reminder, tell a friend about these podcasts. That is how this thing grows organically, and that is how we want this to grow. We want it to be a community of people that connect, and we talk about interesting things. And by the way, feel free to give us feedback and stuff, particularly for my show, that you'd like to hear. We'll be happy to set it up on the program. And again, tell a friend and keep this pirate ship afloat.
This is Corolla Digital.
Welcome to the Dr. Drew podcast. It is my pleasure to welcome Eris Humer to the show today, and you're rocking out to our tunes.
I know. This is so much fun.
It's groovy tunes, and you can hear more. We should have the DVD to give to our guests. CD, rather.
Okay.
The Swinging Sounds of the Dr. Drew podcast. I've picked a whole bunch of tunes like this.
Yeah, this can put you in a really good mood really quickly.
Eris is pregnant, so it's easy to make her be emotional. She can go all the way up or all the way down. Now, she's good.
Yeah, I've been really steady. I mean, my husband is like, wow, my wife doesn't have any mood swings.
This is your second child, right?
My first.
First. Oh, I thought you had another child. Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the deal on Eris. She was the star of the Bravo show L.A. Shrinks. I'm going to have her tell you what it was about in just a second. Her book now is Breakup Emergency, A Guide to Transform Your Breakup into a Breakthrough. Let me get that for my son. No. Maybe my daughter. At Dr. Eris is her Twitter handle, and the website is DrEris, ERIS.com is where you can go to find out more about her and, of course, get the book. And we will put the book up on our website. Yes, gentlemen. Breakup Emergency. Excellent. We'll feature it on the website at DrDrew.com. So tell us about L.A. Shrinks, and if they want to find it on Hulu or somewhere, what are they going to find?
So L.A. Shrinks is actually a really interesting concept because what it does is it follows the doctors in their personal lives as well as their private practice.
And your degree is PsyD, is that right?
I'm a PsyD. Yeah. So I have a doctorate in marriage and family therapy. And so it was a really interesting journey because I think it's the first time where a reality show actually shows the private lives of therapists, which is interesting. And so this whole last season was about me not getting pregnant yet and the struggle of getting pregnant, and I'm almost 40 and what am I going to do? And then all of a sudden, boom, I get pregnant.
And do you talk about the difficulty of compartmentalizing whatever state you're in when you go in to do treatment?
We talk a little bit about that. Absolutely. You know, and for me, I think everybody's different. For me, it's all about self-care and being able to separate it all. I think I naturally do that, but I think because it's all about setting boundaries. So if you're putting yourself first, because you have to in life, you have to love yourself before you love anybody else.
Well, I know in medical training, though, you're trained not to put yourself first. You're absolutely categorically trained to put your patients first all the time, no matter how tired you are and how miserable you are, no matter what, you always put the patients first. That's why borderlines have their way with us so often.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that way in psych training.
I mean, well, do you actually think – do you do that? I mean,
So much so that it's ridiculous. We're so trained to do that. That's why we don't do anything to protect ourselves. That's why we get into lawsuits. That's why it just happens all the time, particularly in general medical kinds of fields where – all that matters is the patient. You know, no matter that's part of the training. That's why you don't sleep for days at a time. So you learn to, no matter how shitty you feel, put the patient first.
But how can you completely focus if you're so enthralled in everything they're going through? Do you feel like you suck yourself in? Because I think that there can be a very healthy balance there.
There's a different kind of work, to mind. You don't have to be fully present. You have to be fully cognitively present, but not emotionally present necessarily, right? Because you're not doing that kind of work typically.
Yeah, I mean, in my private practice, you know, I specialize in couples therapy and people who are on the brink of divorce, going through a divorce, people who have gone through a breakup who want to get in healthier relationships. And so for me, I feel like, and this is what I also showed on LA Shrinks, that it's so important for me to nurture my life and my relationships so that I can walk my talk. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's really important. And so taking care of myself is, I feel, makes me a more effective therapist.
I'm not arguing with that at all. I'm just saying that that's why physicians become shitty parents and not such great partners, and they're not available, and the kids complain that dad was never home, mom's never home, because that becomes I had years and years of therapy before I could ever sort of balance it out. And the way had I balanced, I had to back off of most of the stuff I was doing, because to do it properly, you have to put patients first. You have to all the time. You just have to. I mean, if you're it's 3 a.m. and you're still doing an operation or whatever, you got an ICU patient, you cannot be thinking about yourself. You cannot.
Well,
you
yeah. If you're be. Talking med, okay. So medical.
That's all. I'm
yeah,
an internist.
Right. So the you know of course yeah exactly. And you're just exhausted, and you're working 100 hours a week.
Yeah, but that's why that's why that part of the training is so important. Mm-hmm. So you can really not even feel yourself mm-hmm. while you're focusing on the patient. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. And so when I started working in a psychiatric hospital, I still had that ethos. And the people with the borderline narcissistic patients would just oh my God, you really
they trick you.
Well, not just trick you, but they would take that and just take advantage of mm-hmm. it. So literally, you know, what happened to me was they'd increase their demands. So now they're calling at 3 a.m. because they rolled over and twisted their pinky. And if I go, hey, you know, that could wait till morning, they become enraged. You're the worst doctor ever. How mm-hmm. dare you? And you're not trained for that. In other than psychiatry, you are. But in general medicine, you're right. not trained to deal with that.
I remember when I was an intern, I had a borderline patient. And I went skiing in Aspen. And, of course, she loved me. I was her favorite therapist.
You were the best patient.
I was the
best
doctor ever. Yeah. And then I was on the ski slope. All of a sudden, start getting texts, you know, phone calls, nonstop pages. And she just, you know, went off. So, of course, when you're on your vacation, they suck you right back in, and that's what they do.
And then you're the shittiest doctor
and
ever.
And then you're the worst doctor ever. Yeah.
Can you help people, just sort of hearkening back to Jodi Arias and her borderline condition, can you help people understand why she fit that model? Because we spotted that. All of us spotted that right away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, that's such an interesting case, and it's still going on, and it's so sad. And, you know, and isn't it interesting that they couldn't come up with the, you know, they came up with guilty, but if it's going to be life or if she's going to get the death penalty. And then once again, we're sucked back in. It's like nonstop with Jodi Arias. I think with her, it's that she is so attractive and it's intriguing as to how can somebody that looks like this commit such a heinous act,
right.
such a heinous crime,
yeah.
something so horrific. You know, and it's just devastating.
It just doesn't fit.
It doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm. That
and she's so sweet. I mean, we see this in borderlines all the time, that they're so sweet and lovely and you like them. And that's why it's really difficult, because the borderline patients, they come to you, they look like they're all put together. They just want to better their lives. And then
lo and behold,
you're tricked and sucked in and can't refer out.
Because no one will take them.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you have a few borderline. How many? What's the maximum of borderlines you could treat at a time?
One. Zero.
Yeah. One. Zero.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think you really can treat that many at one time. I mean, but
do you think
I
they
do.
Can
I
be treated?
You know, I think that DBT is very effective.
That's
for borderlines.
Dialectical behavioral therapy for.
Mm-hmm. And I think that to be the most effective therapist, if you can't treat them properly and give them the attention they need, that the best thing you can do as a therapist is to refer them to somebody that does work with them. And I know several therapists that love working with borderlines. Actually, my dissertation advisor, when I was getting my doctorate, her mother was a borderline, and she says that she loves working with borderlines.
Because she's so good at accommodating all that, since she grew up around
mm-hmm.
it. That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
That's interesting. Well, let's do this. I want to hear all about breakup emergency. I want to hear all about your sort of advice for couples. But let's start it by talking about it through some of the calls we've got here. Let's see. Here's a relationship. Okay, let's talk to this one. This is Chris. What's going on?
Hey, how you doing, sir?
Good, Chris. What's up?
Hi, Chris.
Hey, how you doing?
Harris Humor. ID. What's up?
Well, I've been in a relationship for about 4.5 months now. Everything's going great. Probably the best relationship I've ever had. I'm 27 years old. I've been through a couple long ones. Had a kid with one. I'm in the military. We went out of town last weekend, and, you know, we were having a few drinks. And I guess just like any other guy that I've talk to, you know, they always make a joke about how small their penis is. So I made a reference to that, and she said that no, I don't. And you know, she told me how her first boyfriend had, you know, he was like oversized and it hurt and it was unpleasurable. And I just kind of stopped her and I was like, why would you tell me that? So
There is a note here for all women. Do not discuss the size of your previous partner's penises. And I love the fact this is how much women don't understand men. She's like, no. It was awful. It hurt. It was huge. It hurt. And he's here. In spite of the fact that she's telling a tale of woe, the guy goes, I'm completely deflated by this. I can never love you again.
And also, there's no need to really talk about your past sex life, how good or bad it was, period, because you're in a new relationship, and what she should be doing is making you feel really great about yourself and how good she feels in the relationship. So
her excuse was that she was trying to boost my confidence, and I was like, that's a horrible way to boost my confidence, because that's like me saying that, well, I had a tighter vagina, but yours is better because it fits so much better.
No, it's not even. This is shattering in a way that goes deeper than even that. So what can we do?
But
to
she was
this?
Apologizing, right? I mean, she kind of stumbled and felt really bad.
We fought a couple times this week. We fought last night about it because, I just couldn't drop it, you know. And the good thing is that she does get off almost every time we have sex. Not every time, but. I mean, she gets off with me, you know, I use my hands right, I use my mouth. I mean, I don't think I have a small penis, but in the way that she said, well, I've been with bigger, it was kind of like, hey, man, you're not the best, you know? So I just don't know how to kind of move. I want to move on with it because, I mean, we're talking about moving forward and, we're in love, so.
Well, this is what I always say in relationships, is because relationships are so difficult no matter what, as you would agree, Dr. Mm-hmm. Drew. But I think that the more you focus on the solution, the bigger the solution gets. The more you focus on the problem, the bigger the problem gets. And so here she's telling you she loves you. She enjoys you. She enjoys the sex with you. Yeah, she's been with men who have bigger penises, but it sucked. But I'm enjoying you, and you're doing all the right things. Isn't that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, and that's right. I just, you know, like you said, focus on the solution. I was trying to drop the problem, but, I've been sitting
Chris,
at home this week.
Chris. Here's what I know about men and their penises. The penis is a proxy for his worth and esteem. And if you were feeling really good about what you were doing in your life, what's happening amongst your peers in the military or whatever it is you're doing, the penis would not cut to the quick like this. And I understand there's a piece of it, too, that's very primitive, which is, hey, a big penis has been in my territory, goddammit. Put that aside. Grow up, right? Grow up on that one. And it's going to take you a couple weeks, but grow up. Number two, on the one, though, of you doing better in your career so your sense of purpose in the world is bigger, that's what you got to go do, man, so this doesn't cut at you so deep. You understand me?
Yeah, I do.
What's happening? Are you sort of on the shit train right now at work?
No, I mean, I got problems in life just like everybody else.
You got what?
I said I've got problems going on just like everybody else.
That's where you put your focus. You excel. You move up. You take leadership positions. You grab on to things that make you feel better about yourself in the world.
And that's the thing.
And amongst men, too. Not amongst even women. It's amongst men.
Men, because men want to be respected naturally. You know?
We want to be respected. We want to be appreciated.
Appreciated, respected, looked up to, all of those things.
But it's important amongst our male peers.
Exactly,
listen,
for men.
Men want to have a big penis for other men as much as for women. Trust me. That's women miss the nuances of being male. And it's primitive. It's bullshit. It doesn't make sense.
But then
but
when
it
comes...
It's for real.
Totally. But then when it comes to the woman and being in the relationship with the woman, penis size, make her feel good, appreciate her, love her, cherish her. And it's not even about the penis size.
He has to and be confident in that. But she's already told him it's not about that. He's got to be confident that that's true.
It's true, Chris. Yes. It's true. Okay. talking about a woman here, it's true. If you make her feel good. And you know what? She's just, you know, who knows what the past was. She stumbled over her words and...
She fucked up.
Enjoy yourself.
Kelly, what's going on?
Oh, hi, Dr. Drew. I spoke to you a few weeks ago about my mother, who is a very complicated case. She told me to go to Al-Anon and... go see her doctor and see...
Yes, you remember me? Yes, I do.
Okay. So I haven't gone to Al-Anon yet, but I found a meeting that I'm going to.
Did you talk to the doctor?
No, I haven't. I unfortunately, am very busy in my life. And emotionally, I'm very detached from my mother and the situation. And I wanted to talk to my brother and my father about it, which I was just able to do. And, you know, they're on the same page as me.
What is the question today? What's going on today?
Okay. Well, my question today was, a long time ago, you had a podcast and some lady called in about schizophrenia or something like that. And you asked her if the person she was asking about claimed other people to be imposters.
Right.
You said it was a specific disease or infection of the brain. And my mom in the past has told me that she thinks that she is dead and that every person on this planet, like you do your podcast and people are dying in India and everywhere else, right? Because that's what happens in the real world. And we're all just in a hallucination. And when we see her, we think, oh, she's the person we're pretending to be alive for. So she thinks that this is like purgatory, I guess. And
that's a little more involved than what I was talking about. What I was talking about is an organic organic psychosis, where if somebody has a biological brain disorder, they can look like they have a psychiatric problem, but one of the signs that it's not, that it is a biological event like encephalitis or seizure or something else, is they will say, yes, you look like my daughter, but you're an imposter. You're not really her. There's actually a name for it. It's a very specific biological component of a psychotic condition. Now, what your mom is describing is something a little more elaborate, more like she's in a dream state, which is, I don't know what the hell that is. I mean, it could be medication effects even. Yeah, so I'm sorry. It's just harder to – I mean, it's just part of this complexity of your mom's case.
But I think Dr. Drew is right. I think the Al-Anon's really going to help you, because it's going to help you focus on yourself and not be so focused on her disease and what's going on with her, which takes up so much of your time and energy and focus, you know, and gathering information from the doctor that's seeing her, is going to be helpful as well. But definitely start taking care of yourself.
Having that support there too of the Al-Anon sponsors and peers and stuff, you can't do this stuff alone. So people miss. Like they always feel, it's my family, I can take care of my mom.
No,
you'll get another patient that way. You get a second sick person.
And it sucks out a lot of your life. And I get that you want to love your mom, and you can do so even more so by taking care of yourself and not getting so sucked in. So definitely go check out that meeting as soon as possible. And make sure you check out at least 3 meetings, because you might not like the first one. You know, check out 2 or 3 meetings to make sure you get around a group of people that you really like.
That is a really important point that I rarely make, because a lot of people go, I went, I didn't like it. It's like, yeah, but there's not one meeting fits all. There's lots of good ones out there and ones you might not like. So you're right. 3 meetings is a great piece of advice.
Yes.
So let's talk about breakup emergencies. Why'd you write that?
I wrote Breakup Emergency because it's actually what inspired me to become a therapist, was my horrible relationship after relationship. You know, especially in my 20s, I just could not find a way to get in a good relationship. I kept getting my heart broken. I kept dating alcoholics, drug addicts, you know, people who wouldn't commit. And I just was devastated. And then I went through a really bad breakup with somebody who I thought I was going to marry, and he broke with me over the phone. This is before text messaging, over the phone without a warning, and I was just devastated. And I was going through therapy trying to figure out how to heal my heart, and I just kept staying in my victimhood. You know, they kept focusing on all the bad shit that was happening to me, and it wasn't helping me. So I started writing in a journal and started trying to take a more proactive stance on this. And literally, I came up with different remedies to heal myself and my broken heart. And I put it in book form. And, you know, if it helped me, I figured I could help other people throughout the process.
That was before you were trained, right?
The beginning of those stages were before I was even trained. Then I got a master's in psychology and a doctorate in psychology, and then turned it into a book later on.
So from the frame of now a trained professional, what is it? What are those things you were doing?
You
were sort of externalizing your feelings, I guess, writing them down.
And
you were developing your own sort of cognitive behavioral plan?
Yeah, I was.
Interesting.
And I think that the more you focus on healing yourself. I mean, I think the first thing to do is realize that it's a breakup, not a breakdown. Just because your heart is broken doesn't mean your life is over. It can actually mean your life is about to begin, because there's so many lessons to be learned from after you have a breakup. And this goes for divorce too. And it gets, of course, more complicated if you have kids involved and, you know, court and all sorts of complications that come with breakup and divorce. But I think you have to find a way to get your own life back after you've been through something so devastating. And looking at your patterns and behaviors, you have to spend time alone with yourself to do this. So many people, they ask me, you know, why do I have to spend time alone? And I say it's essential for your health and well-being that you reflect on your life and yourself and you know who you are. Because if you don't spend any of time alone, then how are you ever supposed to learn from your mistakes and behaviors and attract somebody better in your life?
Let me challenge the idea of alone. You mean just not in a romantic relationship.
Yes.
You don't mean literally alone. Because really, how else do we understand the self other than in the context of other people?
And you can really do that if you learn who you are.
But you have to do that with other kinds of relationships than romantic relationships.
Absolutely. Friendships. Yeah. I think therapy is really helpful. Yeah. Getting a coach, you know, like you were just talking about being in a 12-step program. You know, for me, I actually quit smoking through Nicotine Anonymous, and that was hugely transformative in my life by working the steps.
Are you comfortable talking about – I always ask people about their own history and
stuff.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I'm on L.A. Shrinks. I talk about all my personal life and struggles.
So what is it that set you up for all those victimizations?
I think first and foremost was my parents' divorce.
How old were you?
I was – when they finally separated,
Eight?
I was 16.
But they fought. When did the trouble start?
When I was an infant. When my mom was pregnant with me.
And what was the nature
and
of their problem?
So I think that they married too young and they didn't really – probably want to get married. They weren't conscious in doing it, 20 years old.
Yeah.
And so you don't really know who you are when you're 20 and they're traveling the world. They were living in India and Singapore.
Why?
And my dad's in the hotel business.
Weird. At 20?
Yeah. They're actually from Austria. And so they were
Crazy.
Living all over the world. And so they fought my entire childhood. And my role was to try and fix their problems.
Well, let's roll it back historically. So they're Austrian. They're 20. You're born when?
74.
74 and 20. So they're kind of – their parents were definitely in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And so was that still trauma raining? Were they Jewish?
No.
Was there still trauma raining down on them from the war that they still now were acting out?
Not them so much. You know, I think that
there's
definitely –
the fact that they run away from their country of origin and stuff sort of smacks of that.
No, not for them. Okay. I think my dad had really big dreams to be in the hotel business and he got transferred. They met in hotel school when they were really young and he got transferred and had these great opportunities and they wanted to live in America.
Oh, that was their goal?
Yeah.
When did they get here?
3 months before I was born.
Okay.
Yeah. So they lived, you know, in India and Singapore and then they were transferred
to
Chicago.
They got here in the 70s, basically.
73.
Ugh. The worst.
They loved it. I guess it was better from where they came from.
Yeah,
right?
It's a bad time to get to America.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. So, but for them, it was great. Opportunity was there for them to create for themselves. And so they fought. And my role as a child was to have them kiss and make up.
But that's
every
most,
kid, night
most kids do that, though, right?
When they fought. But there were big fights.
Yeah.
I mean, we're going to get divorced.
Was there,
you know,
violence?
And no violence, but, you know, there was, you know, drinking, and they weren't alcoholics, but, you know, there was a lot of drinking and partying and they're young and being stupid. And it was just a pretty toxic environment to grow up in. You know, you're not feeling safe in that attachment and you're not being shown great role models of what a relationship's going to look like. So, of course, then when I get older, I'm going to be attracted to more of a dramatic relationship where there's more fighting and arguing and then it just doesn't last. And for me, I just couldn't figure it out. I couldn't figure out relationships. And my name, Eris, is the goddess of strife and discord.
Oh, interesting.
So love is always what was like my intention to figure out in life ever since I was a little girl. Like I wanted to figure it out. Not love. I was never love addicted. I'm sure I have the tendencies of codependency and love addiction, especially in my younger years. But definitely in my younger years, you know.
Well, but a lot of adolescents are that way, so it's hard to call it that then. Even.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I had to figure out love, and that's what my studies were all about. Even in my master's program, like I knew I was that relationships were gonna be my specialty, and divorce. And helping people be more conscious in their relationships. And so, of course, it's a struggle. I mean, over 50% of divorces end up in
marriage. Marriage end up in divorces.
Isn't that interesting
yes.
that I just said that?
Yes, that was.
So marriage ends in divorce because we don't really know what we're doing when we get married. It's just saying, yeah, I want to get married. Oh, this is great. But you don't really know what you're getting into. Because I always say relationships are the most complex situation that we choose to be in as adults. But we're not going into the relationship saying this is a choice that I'm making and this isn't going to always be like the first 3 months of La La Land. Call it La La Land versus Reality Land.
Do you recommend or do you offer premarital counseling?
Yes.
Is that important?
Yeah, I think it's really important for the
survival. Do you ever get people to the point where they shouldn't be getting married or they listen to you if you say that or they get to that realization or able to pull out?
I actually called off my wedding with my husband, who I'm now married to. We were engaged for a long time before we got married, 5 years. And I called it off because I didn't think we were ready to get married. And, you know, I think that took a lot of guts because people had their plane tickets,
really
the
hard.
Venue
yeah,
was booked, and it's really hard. So when I can self-disclose to my clients that I've been there and I've done that, but it was the best decision I could make because I think we had to take certain steps to get to where we are now to be in a better marriage because it's not about the event. It's about the marriage.
But I keep saying there's all these great weddings and horrible marriages.
Yes.
That's so ridiculous.
Because you're focusing on the flowers and the photographers and, you know.
It's so ridiculous. What is that?
It's awful. It's a fantasy that we're trying to live up to. And it's an escape because we don't really want to face the reality of what the relationship is because there's so much shame and embarrassment in not getting along. And I think it takes a really long time to get to know somebody and how to deal with their shadow because everybody has a shadow side, a dark side. And I always tell my patients that you have to know what that person's dark side is. You have to know what your dark side is. But the thing is can you hang with their dark side? Is it going to hinder you in becoming a better person? Or is it going to like weigh you down?
I'm just thinking about what you're going to go through now that you become a parent because it's a whole other quantum level to this experience.
I know. And he's going to trigger all sorts of things in me.
Other deal.
And what if he's like a little mini my husband? That'll be like really interesting to me.
Then he and the two of them will gang up on you. That's what kids, dead husbands and sons do.
Yeah.
Good
yeah.
times. You better have a daughter. Better quick. But she'll gang up on you too, even a worse way.
Even worse.
Don't worry.
Yeah.
Were you an only child?
No, I have a sister.
And was she affected similarly by all this?
She's 4 years younger, which I think is significantly, you know, big age
important.
Difference and important. And she was really affected by it.
I don't think she'd be affected
well.
Even more.
She was affected by it more. And, you know, for me, I pretty much so grew up with both of them in the household, even though it was very
cantankerous.
And so then my dad left and my dad had an affair and it was really difficult for us. And my sister, Colette, was just really affected by it. And then that was another thing because I was the big sister and I had to protect her and make sure she felt safe. And so that put in a whole another thing on me. So that's where all my Al-Anon stuff kicks in. And,
Drama of the Gifted Child.
Good book.
For you.
Yeah. It was a good book. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Take a quick break. Eris Humer is here. She's a psychologist, PsyD. Her book is Breakup Emergency, A Guide to Transform Your Breakup into a Breakthrough. It will be available on the website at Dr. Eris. Follow her there, E-R-I-S. Take a quick break and back with your calls.
Hi, folks. I'm Larry Miller, but in a way, aren't we all? And this week on This Week with Larry Miller, I answer the question because I'm back from Vancouver again, what it was like to go to Tim Hortons for coffee. Did I get there? Listen to the show for free through iTunes or on the Adam Carolla app. We'll see you here.
I think we need to brand a series of musical CDs for Eris. She's like completely rocking out.
I'm going to come back all the time just to dance to the music, and I'm not even a good dancer.
We'll have pregnant mom CDs. What do you think? Music for the moms.
Oh, yeah. That'd be great.
Yeah, all the CDs.
All types of life. All the stages of living. Eris Humer, PsyD, is my guest. Breakup Emergency, A Guide to Transform Your Breakup is the book. It's available on drdrew.com. At Dr. Eris, you can follow her there or go to her website, Dr. Eris, E-R-I-S .com. Take some calls, all right? All right. Let's go to – this is Aaron. What's up, Aaron?
Hey, what's going on, Dr. Drew?
We're good. What's up with you?
I just have a quick question real quick about I've always had a pattern in my life of always just cutting people off. Like, I don't even talk to my mom anymore. My dad disowned me when I was young. Just recently, I cut off my sister because she kind of screwed me over.
Okay, hold on a second. And, there's a couple things here. How old were you when your dad cut you out?
I was in the seventh grade.
Whoa.
Why did this happen? Why did he cut you out?
Because I chose my mom over him.
Mm.
You don't see how that sort of behavior was deeply ingrained in you by your dad?
I do know there's a connection to it. I do know that. I mean, I listened to you for years, and I always kind of psychoanalyzed myself.
Do you see how significant that is? Do you see how significant it is, though, and how you are sort of taking on that life pattern from that?
Yeah.
Let me add another layer to it too, and I'm going to use some words that you may experience as critical, but I'm using them clinically, so I'm not meaning them to be at all judgmental. But if you have a narcissistic personality style, it's easier to go black-white. It's easier to cut people out and not really feel much and move on. It's sort of a hallmark of narcissism, in fact. Mm-hmm. So it might be you have those sorts of issues going on as well. Go ahead, Aaron.
And I do have a black-and-white thing about things. I was trying to make this deal with this person, and, like, he was trying to mess with me. I was like, you know what, forget it. You know, I'm not going to just deal with it. And, like, I just don't like dealing with things. I just don't even mess with it.
You feel like an interesting person to me in that what I would expect from you is to say that feelings don't really matter, that feelings are to be sort of ignored and just suppressed and whatever. And yet I feel like you're kind of an emotional person. Is that right?
I really am. Yes,
yeah.
I am.
It's almost like a learned behavior almost as well, because in a narcissistic personality disorder, you know, the person doesn't even really recognize what they're doing. I'm hearing that you are recognizing it. You don't want to be like this. You want to change it.
And they also, a narcissistic, I'll just say style, we don't even say disorder yet. Mm-hmm. Feelings have no meaning. Mm-hmm. They're not significant.
Exactly.
But I feel like they kind of are to you. Maybe it's in certain moments they're not, Aaron. Maybe you get pushed to a place where you go, fuck it, meaning, you know, you cut off from feelings and then you cut off from people. Does that fit?
Yeah, and I'll get emotional, like, when I'm watching movies. Like, I just watched Superman the other day, and I cried when he lost his dad, you know? Like, so I know that affects me.
No, I know. I feel the emotions from you. I can feel,
you know,
like you're connected.
I think you should probably go get in therapy and work on those issues from when your father cut you off when you were a little boy, because I think you're also protecting yourself subconsciously from people, you know? And
so
you
so you cut them off before they cut you off.
Exactly.
Because that pain was so great.
Mm-hmm.
Does that fit?
Yeah, I really do try to protect myself against
people. Hang on. You're skipping over the significance of this. You cut other people off because you don't ever be in a position again of being so – feeling that pain of somebody cutting you off.
Like your dad did.
I don't disagree with you.
Well, see, that's where you get – but let me just tell you, you're not connecting to that feeling. That reality. You're not attached to that, and that's where you need to do your work.
Yeah, and I think that you can definitely get through this if you get a therapist that you really can trust, you know, that you feel good with. And if you go, you know, for like a year and you work a little bit on your past and you do this regularly – I'm not talking once a month. I'm talking regularly once a week.
Once or twice a week.
For a while, then I think you'll really be able to break some of these patterns.
And let me – I want to put a bright light on it again. When we pointed out to you right where the rubber hits the road, then you could – I could feel you become non-emotional, become intellectual and go, yeah, I get that. But that's right where you need to dig into the emotions, and that's where all the pain is.
I got a question though. Like, is that – I mean, is it really wrong when I do that? Like, just like,
it's not wrong. It's a style. Well, here's the deal. It's a style. It's a phenomenon. It's something you've noticed about yourself, and it bothers you. And it's certainly not kind. it may not serve you well.
Yeah,
too.
And I mean, do you ever want to be in a long term relationship with somebody?
Well, I was with my wife for 11 years, and you know, she cheated on me, and I just. That was it. You know, marriage over.
Pow.
Yeah,
cut her off.
That's it. It's
there
over.
Goes.
So this is, you know.
So you'll always have that, by the way. You'll
that.
Be good at that forever. But you want to be able to be in control of it, not it be in control of you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and I don't want to ever do that to my daughter. Like, I have a 13-year-old daughter. I love her. She lives with me. I'm the one that takes care of her. you know, her mom just kind of went off the deep end for a while, and then I just kind of took over. And I don't want to ever do that to my daughter. I just fear that happening one day. I just hope that doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, that's something I don't want to ever experience, at least for my daughter. I always try to cater to her.
Why would that happen, though? Why would you?
I don't know. You know, I don't know. You know, maybe she gets into drugs. Like, that's the thing with my mom. My mom got into drugs. She's a meth head. I don't talk to her no more because she got into meth, and she's with this guy that's
by the way, not a bad idea. Not a bad idea.
Cut her off.
That's okay. I support that, by the way.
But if that ever happens to your daughter, I mean, there you are. You need to support her and make sure she gets the care that she needs. If she's ever in a bad situation like that, you know, be there for her. Unless, you know, just you're her father.
Yeah.
So it's just to be able to support you, support her. But definitely get yourself into some therapy. I think you could definitely benefit from it. And don't go in your head like, I'm not going to do that, you know. Cause
no, I've been thinking about it. I do listen. I listen to all the Kroll. I listen to all the Digital Kroll's podcasts. I listen to Allison Rosen. I think she's awesome. And she's in therapy. And I know a lot of people do it. And I've been thinking about doing it. So
it would help you. It would not hurt you. That's for sure. It would help you. All right?
Good luck.
Thank you very much.
I did therapy forever.
Me too.
I did 11 years of therapy.
I love therapy.
Me too. I have a fantasy of going back and doing psychoanalysis.
Oh, really?
That's what I want to go do. But I can't afford the time
That's
nor the
five...
money. 3 days a week. I'll do 3 days a week.
You do three.
I could
okay,
never
so
do
not
five
the
days
full
week.
On 5 days a week.
I could never do 5 days a week. Maybe I would. I mean, I work out 5 days a week.
Right.
And maybe I could commit to it.
Work out the mind.
That being my twilight years. But I did a couple sessions with psychoanalysis, and I'm there. I have no problem getting into that stuff very deeply. Mm-hmm. And it's all flowing around.
Mm-hmm. I studied Jungian therapy, depth therapy. Mm-hmm. My master's I went to Pacifica. So I love Jungian depth therapy. But
did you do that kind of therapy?
My therapist actually went to Pacifica, you know, but so I do some of the tool. She uses a lot of that methodology.
Explain to people
so
what
it's
that is.
More about dreams and the unconscious and bringing it more to consciousness.
But that's what psychoanalysis is too. But
right.
that's using – psychoanalysis is more using free association interpretation. Jungian is using archetypes.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that to them.
So it's – I mean I always – how I explain it is like it's more imaginal. You know, it's not –
But that's the way psychoanalysis is too.
But Jung is so – Jung is a lot more – maybe it's more spiritual psychology, depth psychology where it's not – yeah, it's more archetypes and
– More fantasy?
It's not really fantasy. No, I don't think it's fantasy. It's more just bringing the unconscious to the unconscious.
Patterns.
Yeah, whatever's inside of you, your archetypal patterns. But – For me, I don't use that in my private practice. I'm more solution focused.
Which would be sort of cognitive behavior kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a little – I'm sort of late to the party on CBT because I have such value in emotionally focused therapies, you know, in really changing what's going on the right side of our brain, which is nonlinear, non-cognitive. And I think that's relational therapies. Interpersonal therapies. And by the way, people are interested in that. Go to Porges and Shore. Chris, if you can get me those episodes, with the Porges and Shore episodes. And also Sue Johnson, which really get into great depth on those models.
And she has a good couples therapy as well for emotion.
But she's all emotionally focused.
Exactly. So. And I definitely think that the tools are important. When I see couples, a lot of times they're in crisis. And so for me personally, I feel that it's effective when – I think that there's so much water under the bridge by the time they come to me that if they keep focusing on all of those problems that they're going to drown.
Right.
And so I don't find it as effective in couples work unless you're really committed to doing years of therapy together. And for the most part, couples aren't. They want to get to a solution and breakthrough. And I do a lot of intensives with couples where I work with them at 6 hours at a time. And I see the greatest success in doing that.
And what happens in 6 hours of treatment, of therapy?
Well, depending on the couple, we might do active therapy like ropes course. Well, first I have to get to know who the couple is. I see the couple together. I separate them depending on what they're going through, work with a wife, work with a husband, and then I'll see different tools. I might take them doing some active therapy exercises such as trust-building exercises, or if they're having troubles with their sex life, I'll bring them, you know, to a place that can help entice that again and bring that back to life. But it's very much – I mean,
what
I
What does
see,
that mean? That seems vague.
So let's say that a woman feels very insecure with herself, you know, and get her more in tune to her sexuality. And you can do that through, you know, tantric sex session, as actually my husband and I were going through a difficult time in our sex life, and we talked about it on LA Shrinks. And the intention is that was to say, you know, even we go through times where we're not having sex, and what do we do to get through that, you know? And it's figuring out like what's holding us back, and therapy can help that. And we also did some tantric sex sessions, which was really effective, and bringing that back to life and really just working on it. So I look at each couple as an individual and see what's going to help them. And I think the intensive therapy that I do with them is really helpful.
So what would
it's
you
like say? Rehab.
No,
couples.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
What would you say the number? Well, let me throw my card. The number one complaint I keep hearing is when you really get – oh, by the way, the Porges episode was episode 63, Shore 65. How about Sue Johnson? Give me that one. When you really distill down what they're complaining about, when they're really going at it, it's they don't feel safe. Mm-hmm. They feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. Is that one of the more common things you hear?
Feel unsafe or unheard, or, you know, like I think what I notice is that the women don't feel safe and the men don't feel respected. For the most part, that's a general stereotype, but that's usually what it is. Like, he's not feeling heard and he's being bitched at all the time. And
Sue Johnson is episode 13. He's being bitched at because he's not being heard?
I know he's being bitched at because nothing's ever good enough. And oh. She's doing that because she's not feeling safe and, you know, and that she's not feeling loved or heard. So it all boils down to, no matter how cliche it sounds, it all boils down to communication.
But I don't like using that because people get caught up in the cognitive then. It's about really expressing feelings.
But learning how to. But I think if you get too caught up – and this is, of course, where the emotional – you know, the emotion-based therapy is great. But I think that if you get too – sometimes people get too caught up in the feelings. And I think that that can hinder the relationship as well. I mean, you see so many couples and it's like week after week after week, if you're focusing on how they're feeling, you can't sort of break them through that, you know, because it's really heavy and intense. So sometimes you have to get out of that rut, you know, and so
into solutions.
Into solutions.
Specific solutions. Behavioral
solutions, learning how to communicate, getting, you know, just breaking through those hurt feelings, mm-hmm. and breaking through it to,
you know,
move
forward. Give me an example of a communication technique that people might benefit from.
I think reflective listening is really good.
Like, I heard you
yes.
say.
Yes. Okay. Because even with my husband, when we're having an argument, you know, it's I'm hearing him say something completely different than what he might be saying to me.
I can't get people to slow down and do that. I can't get it in my own relationship to people to go, hang on, let me make sure I'm hearing you. I heard you say.
And it's not how you interpret. It's exactly what you heard them say.
Right.
So you have to be very directive
in
therapy.
And what I get back is, you're never here. You never listen to me. You're not hearing me. Why are you so defensive?
Really?
As opposed to taking turns.
Yeah. No.
It's hard to get people to take turns.
In their own life.
Yes.
You know, and so I think that in that's what in therapy, you know, you're
practicing. Oh, I see
you
practice it.
You know, so you're practicing in therapy and then you're using that tool at home. And I love it when my couples come back and they're like, yeah, we used what you said, Doc. You know, what I heard you say is, and they kind of laugh at it, but they're seeing movement forward.
Yeah.
And it's important to make sure you know what your spouse is saying. You have to know who your spouse is because it's just confusing and complex to
be
in a relationship.
So let's describe that again for people because that is that's sort of relationship 101, which is you take turns expressing yourself, and then once the one person is done, the receiving person tells the person what they heard.
Exactly. Yeah. What they heard. So then you say, what I heard you say is, I get really upset when you do not empty the dishwasher.
Right. Don't get into what you don't say is, I heard you say I get really upset when you empty the dishwasher, and that makes me feel like what I hear you saying, therefore, is that I'm an asshole.
Right.
Don't get into that part.
Yes.
Just get into what you're actually hearing.
Yes. And so just literally repeat back. And then
they have a chance to acknowledge or modify that.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's take another call. This is Ron. Ron, what's up?
Yeah.
Hey, Ron.
Hey, listen, real quick, I really appreciate all that you've done over the years, Dr. Drew, and Dr. Harris, I have the world's respect for you and what you're doing as well.
Thank you.
Dr. Drew, I know not to harp on the past too much because I know that's Giovanni's territory, but over the years, in your medical profession and what you've seen, I've always wanted to ask, If you were to go back and say maybe 10, 15 years in the past and talk to, you know, a younger, more virile Dr. Drew, what would you correct him on? What would you say, listen, you've been saying this, but, you know, 15 years later, we're going to discover this is true. Such things like, you know, methamphetamine causes holes in the heads, or things like what you've experienced, Dr. Harris, and you're in the sort of the psychotherapy and psychoanalysis area.
You mean things that we used to advocate that were not true?
Yeah, what's evolved in medicine? Yeah, it's something that you'd have to, yeah, that you really want to correct, or what you've seen change. Yes.
It's funny. I had some thought about that this morning, and now I can't. Now it escapes me what it was. I was thinking about something that I said that was just, I wouldn't stand by that today.
Well, in your younger years, there's so many times where even we have these beliefs, like even Dr. Drew saying, I'm about to have a child, right? I'm pregnant, so I'm about to have a baby. How my life perspective is going to totally change if I only knew, because I've, you know, done, of course, thousands of hours with parents and kids, and how much different my perspective is going to be even after I have kids. So, you know, I think in life experience, you always go back and you can always look back and say, oh, if I only knew that then, right?
There's that, but there was some stuff. For some reason, I was thinking about it this morning. When Adam and I used to do a Love Line on MTV, there was something I was talking about. I thought about this morning, strange, and I thought, well, that wasn't really right. I can't remember right now. But there's a million things that – I think that one of the interesting things to think about is what you tell yourself if you were talking to yourself at age 25 or something now, given your training and experience and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different things. So I know I could kind of think I could distill it down to one thing. I think – for me, it's about being more attuned to what other people are experiencing, particularly women. Because particularly back in those days, in the 70s and 80s, all we were taught was that everyone is the same. Females are males in dresses. Forget it otherwise.
Wow.
If you say anything else, it's sacrilegious, and it's you're caving to what society is creating. And there's still that's in the air again in colleges and stuff, too, by the way.
It is. It is. And I also think that now – so then it becomes men and women. So women feel, men think, right? But now I think that it's the yin and the yang, the male and the female, we're blending even more together. Mm-hmm. So it gets even more confusing, right?
Yes.
Because we're in touch with our masculine and feminine sides. So that's evolving even more so. So you have to take each individual and look at that, and it gets more complex, and that's where power struggles are even more so in relationships, because the male-female dynamic keeps evolving and changing so much, and we can't even keep up with it.
Right. Now, we might not be aware of how it's affecting what we need as a man or a woman, because
mm-hmm.
the power stuff just stands out.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's just as challenging for women as it is for men nowadays.
In what sense?
In keeping up with it, because women are getting ahead in the workplace and we're becoming stronger, and then it gets confusing to us because we're not feeling nurtured, but we want to be strong, and there's a power struggle there, and then men aren't supposed to have feelings and emotions, yet they are now, and there's, you know, struggles with that. So I think we're learning and evolving and growing.
Well, I think you didn't hit the nail on the head with the male stuff so much, because you're not experiencing that. You're experiencing the female thing, and that's what's confusing for men, is you want to feel nurtured and you don't at the same time. You want to be autonomous and powerful, and how do we cut through those two things? It's really hard for men.
Exactly.
It's
and that's
really hard for
that's
us.
The struggle nowadays, you know, and in relationships even, you know, that I think the power struggle, or just, why are you feeling? You're supposed to just take care of us, and there's, you know, a struggle in that. So I think that I think the studies are there in trying to figure out the male-female dynamics and
what do you
how
think
that's
we
evolving and growing.
What do you think we need to do to help marriages going forward, to make them more successful, other than waiting and making sure you're making the choice in an evolved way? Most people – I mean, you got to remember, you're seeing a upper echelon of society, really. People that can mm-hmm. afford this mm-hmm. and have time for it mm-hmm. and are intellectually prone to it and disposed to it culturally. That is not 90% of America. What do we need to do with the people that I talk to every day and through Teen Mom and HLN? That's a population that marriages and relationships are just a mess.
I know. I think that people just need to talk to each other. They need to take a little more time, not rush into things. But there's the impulses there. I mean, people are human. So I think you have to learn from your mistakes.
But most kids are having children before they even contemplate marriage.
So we're talking.
That's just America. That's what's happening now.
Mm-hmm.
No, not even teen. Forget teen. They're 20. Every night on Love Line, mm-hmm. almost every call is, I'm 23. I got a couple kids with this girl, a kid with that girl. And I'm with this girlfriend for 4 years. And we're thinking about getting married, but I don't know. I'm really not ready for that. But no problem, three kids.
Don't get married.
But what's with the having the kids before? Right? Isn't that – I mean, the if marriage was created – if marriage has one purpose, it's to form a stable unit within which to raise kids. That's really the only real reason for marriage. I mean, we're healthy or we're marriages, but ultimately it's there to propagate the species. And
well, yeah, that's why the institution of marriage was – one of the reasons why we have
that's
the institution.
That's the primary reason. It's, I mean, what's, you
know,
I mean,
financial reasons as well as having a family, you know, to be, I guess, for women back in the day, for women to be able to be taken care of. And then, of course, to have the family and the children. But things have changed and evolved. But what's the question? How do you make these marriages or relationships better?
How do we help people understand what they need to do to be happy? Really?
First things first is you have to love yourself before you can possibly ever love anybody else. I think that's the most important thing for us to know is getting to know yourself and who you are. But everybody's, you know, a lot of these people are putting all their energy and focus on the dramas happening in their life or the kids or the struggles that they're going through, you know, and they're not putting any focus on who they are as individuals.
I'm not sure everybody can do that. They're too busy struggling, trying to survive.
So what do you think?
I don't know. I don't know the answer. I think simple messages maybe like, hey, don't have kids until you're really ready to do that. And marriage is tough enough, but kids is twice as hard. Well, and so if you put marriage after kids, you're really fucking up because
kids are not going to make your life easier. They're definitely going to make your life more difficult. But if you're going to tell a young kid that who wants to have – a child as well, they're not going to believe that. You know, we can only learn from our mistakes. I think age has everything to do with it. You know, as we grow older, we learn and hopefully move forward and learn from our past life choices. But a 20-something-year-old, I at 20 years old was not going to listen to anybody give me advice because I had to learn everything on my own.
So it's no hope. We're just going to have to kids more. We're just going to continue this path. More kids out of wedlock.
Well, I think that
more
there's education, right? I mean, education in schools and practicing safe sex and showing more. I think Teen Mom has helped a lot of.
It has helped.
Helped
dramatically.
A lot of people.
Dramatically.
Not want to, you know, have a child at that age. So I think that continuing to put programs out there and books out there on television, on the radio, you know, I think that education is what's going to help. And showing other people's – I think that's why people are so attracted to these reality TV shows because they want to look at people's life struggles and realize maybe their life struggles aren't as bad and maybe they can learn from some of them.
Is it a schadenfreude where they just want to feel, you know, an acting out feeling on the other people's lives or do they actually think they'll learn? I think they will learn.
I think they do learn. I know that on LA Shrinks when I was sharing all of my struggles on my past with eating disorders and not having a child that I helped a lot of women by just sharing my story as well as the therapy that I did on the show and working with the different couples and individuals that I did work with. People learned from that. And so I think the more education that's out there, the more that we see visually, we learn from what we see. So I think if we're putting more examples out there, then hopefully.
And you were you anorectic or mixed?
Mixed.
Mixed. Mm-hmm. For how long?
Bulimic mostly, but both. For 4 years.
And was that treated just in the primary therapy or did that?
It was a mixture. I mean, yeah.
Or do you have any separate treatment for that?
No, just therapy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You look like it hurts to think about it.
I mean, it's really difficult to go through. I mean, even it was interesting because it came up on LA Shrinks when my husband and I were going through a difficult time in our sex life. I actually was insecure. So we'll backtrack. So in my early 20s, I was dating a man and I ended up getting implants. Mm. And so I got these implants to think that I would feel better. Well, then 10 years later, I got infection in my implants and it was really horrible. Ugh. Long story short, I ended up getting them taken out and the infection was so bad that the doctor that was operating on me, it was out of the scope of his practice and I ended up getting a botched surgery. So he ended up, I woke up in the middle of surgery with a liposuction machine in my breast. And they were sucking out this infection that they didn't even know what the infection was. And so I had basically my breast was like cut in half because all this breast tissue was taken out. And I, you know, that it was a really hard surgery. I mean, it was horrific, you know, and, you know, this was only 5 years ago. And I was, you know, already a therapist and I was working really hard. And I'm like the type of person that was like, okay, I'll fight through this. I'll get through this. And kind of just stuffing those feelings down and not knowing how it was affecting my marriage, you know, because my husband was always so supportive. Like, don't worry about it. We'll get through this. You just let your body heal.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was shutting myself off sexually because I was so embarrassed that I had these two breasts that were, you know, lopsided and I wasn't feeling sexy. Mm. And I ended up, we went and saw a sex therapist on LA Shrinks and that came up, you know, and it just like overwhelmed me. I mean, it was a real authentic moment that, oh my God, that's something that has affected me so deeply, you know, on so many levels.
I was going to say, it's not just the obvious, but if you've already had body image issues with the eating disorder and stuff, it's just like, oof.
And so it was bringing up all the past of my body, you know, body image issues, my self-esteem, not feeling sexy as a woman, not feeling connected to my husband, you know, and that was all my internal process that I was going through was so difficult and not expressing it because I'm having to plow through life like the people that you were just talking about. You know, there's so, we have so many issues that we're just focusing on life at hand and we're not focusing on ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so when we do that, we lose a part of who we are. Mm-hmm. So I
and
got
it gets you. It comes back.
Yeah, it was really hard, but oh my God, when I got to go through that in therapy, like it lifted. Mm. I mean, so much was lifted and I got to connect with my husband again, mm-hmm. and connect with myself again and work through that because for the 4 years, because I didn't want to get implants and get reconstructive surgery because I didn't want to go there again, mm-hmm. you know, at that time. But I thought in my head that was the only thing that I could do to fix this was to get reconstructive surgery. But to do that to myself again, it was like in my mind, and do I want to do that before I have kids or after I have kids? Because I'm getting close to 40. Like all of these things were going on in my mind, you know, and the struggle that I was having. And I was keeping that all inside of me. And lo and behold, it was affecting my marriage.
Of course. Of course.
You know? So, yeah. So I went through all of that on LA Shrinks and it was life transformative for me because then I could work through it by talking about it, by writing about
it. Doing it in front of other people, doing it in front of a camera, was it different or just same?
I think it was the same, you know, because yeah. It's, you know, it's an authentic, it just comes over you and you forget the cameras are there. You're just, you know, going through it in that moment. And it was, you know, I'm really grateful for that experience for myself, you know, and now I'm pregnant and I didn't get reconstructive surgery and I don't feel shitty about myself anymore. You know, it doesn't mean that, well, we'll see what happens to my body now after I have kids and, you know, what happens and what I decide to do then. But now I feel good with myself and my body, which I didn't because mentally I wasn't okay.
I understand. It's intense.
Mm-hmm.
Be careful also after pregnancy. The hormonal changes are massive, especially at 40 and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
So make sure that they're always evaluating that carefully because you'll blame yourself for whatever happens when it's just your biology.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that goes on that sometimes it's the cigar is just a good smoke. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you know, that's the thing with somebody who has struggled with body image issues getting pregnant. You know, it's definitely something that's on my mind, you know, and taking care of myself. I'm doing a lot of yoga and just keeping, you know, spiritually, mentally, and physically focused. But, man, you know, my first trimester, I gained 12 pounds. And they're like, you're supposed to gain 1 or 2 pounds.
Yeah, but you're a big person.
I am.
Yeah.
You know, but still, you know, so then, you know, you get to check in with your, you know, so it's like, that's the thing is that you have to constantly be checking in with yourself. You know, even if you think, you know, it's been 20 years since my eating disorder, but I still constantly have to check in with myself and make sure I'm okay. Things just don't go away like it's magic.
Right.
You know, so you're always having to work on yourself constantly, forever.
We're out of time. I could go on for another hour, but we'll have to do it another time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. You know, you are a role model for me.
Well, very sweet. I appreciate you sharing your story, too, because it's moving. And it's an intense time, too, when you're right in the middle. How far along in your pregnancy?
So I'm 17 weeks.
Okay, so you're right midway.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's something that women definitely go through. You know, I go on blogs, like, looking at women, you know, with body image issues. And during pregnancy and after pregnancy, it's a big thing. So
we should do. We should do a show maybe just dedicated to that, or a couple of shows even somewhere down the line.
That would be really interesting because I'm going to have to work on it myself.
Yeah, and maybe
share that.
It'll be a few weeks down the line, so you'll be either through or down the stream in your pregnancy. Good news is, third trimester, you'll all of a sudden want to have sex with your husband all the time. That's part of the hormonal changes of that, regardless of your body.
I want to have sex with my husband all the time. Anyway.
Well, but it'll really kick in towards that
third trimester.
Oh, yeah. Prepare for that.
Yay.
So, Eris Humer, she is a psychologist. She is from L.A. Shrinks. You can, I'm sure, find the show on Hulu. I'm sure they'll be re-airing it on Bravo. The book we'll have up on the website, Breakup Emergency, Guide to Transform Your Breakup into a Breakthrough, at Dr., full word, Dr. Eris, E-R-I-S, and Dr. Eris, similarly spelled, .com is the website, and hopefully we'll have her back soon.
Thank you so much.
See you next time.
Yeah.
This is Corolla Digital.